call to tonight's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Rhett Cease, and tonight's specific topic is on handling challenging questions related to the Energy Innovation Act. As we know, the more progress that we make in Congress, the more likely it is that we will face questions and critique about the Energy Innovation Act and about Citizens Climate Lobby. So what we're focusing on tonight is providing you as volunteers with the skills and resources to respond to questions gracefully and being key in empowering all of us to be successful in our advocacy. So to help, we're going to provide some general guidance on how to best engage with others who have critiques and questions, as well as highlight a new resource that's going to walk you through really some helpful advice and recommended talking points. So with that, let me introduce our esteemed speakers this evening. We're going to have the chance to learn from Adeline DeYoung and Tony Cerna. Adeline works in our DC office as CCL's Government Affairs Coordinator. She's working and focused on tracking and researching pertinent legislation, meeting with congressional offices and NGOs, as well as advocating for CCL's policy goals. And she's been with CCL since she's in January of 2015. And with her is Tony. Tony drives our organization-wide strategic thinking for Citizens Climate Education and Citizens Climate Lobby, provides support for all of our long-range planning, and helps clarify our organizational priorities and maximize our effectiveness at achieving them. So with that, you are in good hands with two wonderful speakers, and we're going to walk through the following agenda. We'll give you some basic overview and some starter recommendations. We'll highlight the importance of listening, as well as understanding the context for which you might find yourself having these questions and dialogue. We'll talk then further about knowing your audience and what to do then when somebody asks certain questions, and highlight the resource. And with that, Adeline and Tony, and the floor is yours. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brett. So one thing we want to point out to folks is that when we're talking about the bill, the first thing you want to do is we want to start with our main top level talking points. And so what we're dealing with today is we're going to go into the nitty gritty, you know, this is what you deal with in the Q&A. This is like deep in your conversation, but you always want to start with, you know, the top messages. And that means, you know, that the bill is effective, that it's going to reduce America's emissions by 40% within 12 years. You want to say that it's good for people, you know, that it'll improve health and save lives by reducing pollution that Americans breathe and put money directly into people's pockets. You want to say that it's good for the economy, you know, growing jobs, growing the economy. And you want to say that it's bipartisan, that both Republicans and Democrats are on board, that the majority of Americans support Congress taking climate action and solving climate change is too urgent to get caught up in partisan politics. And also that the bill is revenue neutral. So, you know, that's always your where you start. When someone says, you know, give me your elevator pitch about the bill, you want to start with it's effective, it's good for people, it's good for the economy, it's bipartisan, and it's revenue neutral. It's only after that that you want to get into some of these other things.
All right. So what you always want to do before you even respond is ask yourself, do you need to respond? So this should always be your first question. There are some cases where your best option is not to respond. For instance, engaging with strong climate deniers is rarely productive, especially in public settings. It can be best to ignore or deflect or quickly pivot back to your key message, like the ones that Tony was just covering. Also, there are national organizations that are firmly opposed to our type of climate solutions on both the right and the left. CCL's national staff is working with many of these organizations, and the relationships are probably as good as they can be, sometimes with an agreement to disagree. If you have questions about a particular organization, please contact Taylor Krause in the DC office. I think Brett just posted her email in the chat. Thank you, Brett. That said, it can be okay to engage with people who have been influenced by an organization but are not central to it. So if someone says something like, I heard organization X says, feel free to engage on the topic, always being respectful of other organizations. Online forums and email threads can be some of the worst places for dialogue. So really don't give in to the temptation to correct every person who has said something wrong on the internet. Often it's best to just let it go and focus on spreading your positive message.
And as we try to teach at Citizens Climate Lobby, one of the most important things is listening. So people are much more likely to be open to what you have to say once they feel they have been listened to. You can help them feel heard by asking questions, to make sure that people understand, you know, make sure that you understand their concerns properly. You can restate their question or comment so that you and they are sure that you understand it. You can articulate places of agreement with their values and concerns when possible and use those to like reframe the conversation. You know, so an example might be, it sounds to me like you want an effective solution, or you might want to resonate or agree with their values. So like, I agree, effectiveness is really important to me as well. You might continue with something like, this may not satisfy you, but what I like about the bill is, and those kinds of things can be really key. There's, you know, there's much more ability to do this one-on-one or in a small group than during a large public talk. But in either case, you can try to convey an honest curiosity and openness to what they're saying.
And another very important thing to consider before responding to a question is the context. So this matters a great deal. How you engage is different during a one-on-one conversation, during a presentation, with the media, during a meeting with community leaders, or during a meeting with a member of a congressional office. A one-on-one conversation allows for a much deeper engagement, more of a chance to ask questions and provide longer answers. With an audience of one, you really have the freedom to tailor your answers to that specific person you're talking to. During a presentation or other public arena, you often have a diverse audience with different knowledge and beliefs. So you want to be respectful and respond to people's questions and concerns, but you don't want to get off topic or into a back and forth argument. As described above, try to reframe the conversation around values and find places of agreement. To keep things on track, you might end a response with, "I'd be happy to talk more about this with you later." With the media, you have to be especially careful. They can lift any quote or soundbite, so it's really important to stay on message with what you want them to quote. Avoid repeating questions back. You don't want their words in your mouth. And note that this is like the exact opposite of what you might do in a one-on-one conversation where reflection can really help with connection. With a community leader or a congressional office, you want to do your best to understand concerns and respond when you can. But it can often be most valuable to seek areas of agreement and shared values rather than focus on disagreement about details.
It's really important to meet people where they are and connect with them as much as possible. So you really want to know your audience. Ideally, you're a trusted messenger with the audience and you share values, culture, and identity. If you aren't the ideal messenger, be mindful of your language to connect with your audience's values and viewpoints. For example, when speaking with a more conservative audience, consider framing your talk with values that many conservatives share: authority, loyalty, freedom, independence. When speaking with a left-leaning audience, consider frames based on justice, fairness, equality, or forward progress.
All right, so this is all and well, but I know you guys want to know, what do I do when someone asks, and you know, some often specific topic that comes up? So we made this big resource for some common and tricky topics that may come up in your work. It suggests possible underlying values, it provides background, and it even offers possible responses. So also this list is not exhaustive, but it's the frequently asked questions that we've been getting most typically, and some may be added in the future. So now we're gonna go online to community. Brett's already shared the link, but we're gonna show you how to find it. So from the community homepage, first, there's a couple ways to find it. First, we can click on resources and training up at that top tab. And you're going to go to all resources. All right. And then once you're here, you scroll down a little bit and you will see all the resources by category. And this is under the Energy Innovation Act. And so Brett's hovering it over it there. It's this handling challenging questions about the Energy Innovation Act. So this is the resource we're going to be going over. But first, another quick way to find it. From any page on community, you can go into that search bar by the top, type in handling challenging questions, it'll pop up. Brett will click on it, and then a few different things will load. So actually the link to the exact resource is the second one here. But don't worry if you clicked on a different one, they all have a link that will get you to the actual document. Okay, so this is where we're at. A few things to cover on here. Is this preamble, which Tony and I just went over with you, is there's this little description, then if you scroll down a little bit, that background, that's the preamble we just read to you with everything you might want to consider before answering a question. Next is sort of table of contents. If you're in the PDF version, it looks a little different, but here on the website, if you scroll down, you can just see all the different topics we cover. So disagreement on policy details, ambition concerns, Clean Air Act regulatory pause concerns, fossil fuel concerns, next social and environmental justice concerns, government concerns, cost of living impacts, distrust of markets, and lastly, CCL theory of change and methodology. So those are the 10 topics, and each one you can see has different topics underneath. You can click on those to expand. And so, yeah, that's how you basically will use this website resource. But if you want to look at everything at once, you can scroll up to the top there and go to the PDF version. So Brett, if you want to go ahead and open that one. All right, so here's a giant PDF version. This can be useful for a few different reasons. One is, say you just want to see anything that has to do with the Clean Air Act, and so you want to just hit Command F or Control F or whatever it is on a Mac versus PC, and you can see all the different times it comes up in here and go and scroll through all those. So for something like that, that makes this really easy. Another reason you might want to have this whole PDF is, say you want to print it out and bring it with you to go tabling. That way you can be reading this as you're waiting for people to come up. If someone comes up with a certain question, you can quickly go to that page looking at the table of contents and read off what's on there. So this is just a really useful thing to maybe not have in your back pocket because it's like 60 pages. So, but it's a really great document whether you want to search through it or print it out and bring it with you.
Thanks so much, Adeline. Yeah, one other thing just to add is the beautiful thing about that resource page, if you go there on your mobile device too, all of those accordions expand and contract and make it very easy so you don't even have to have a printout. You really can just have that phone, and as long as you have data or a Wi-Fi connection, you can easily download and see that page with a quick flick of the button on your mobile device. And that should help out with any kind of tabling or outreach that you're doing.
So next, Tony is going to go over exactly how to use each topic.
Great. Thanks, Adeline. So for each question that someone might bring up, we put sort of three different sections. There's what we're calling possible underlying factors. So these could be, you know, this is the sort of the reframing, the looking underneath, you know, when someone says, you know, that they've got a specific concern, the words that they're using may not always really describe the details of the underlying concern. So, you know, for this first one, you know, about the military rebate, they might be thinking about the military being the single biggest emitter, but they might just have a dislike of the military for some other reason. So just trying to understand what might be going on for the person. Obviously, we don't know, we're not there, but we're just sort of trying to help you think about what might be some of those underlying factors. The second section is background. And so this is, we want to help you feel like you have the information that you need to understand the issue. So this is, you know, this might help you dive deep into this. You know, here's the spreadsheet, here's a link to the details, here's the stats, here's the whole section of the bill that this, you know, refers to. But this is not the section of what you might actually say to people. This is sort of what you might want to learn so that you're prepared the next time someone says this, or the next time you're going into a member of Congress's office. And then there's a section that we've labeled, you know, what you might say. And so this is trying to condense this down and say, like, what's the most important thing that I might want to convey here? Sometimes it's just a few sentences. Sometimes it's longer than that, and you might want to consider just which parts of that you're going to say. We're not saying that this is a script. It's not something you memorize, but it's just giving you a sense of, you know, here might be a way to respond to this kind of question that, you know, tries to address the underlying issues that we think the people might be holding. So, you know, when you look at, you know, the what you might say for the military, you know, I might say, you know, while the military is a big emitter of greenhouse gases, they are responsible for roughly 1% of U.S. emissions. For strategic and environmental reasons, the military has already been acting to reduce fuel use. This exemption should not prevent the U.S. from meeting the bold emission targets in the Energy Innovation Act. And so, like, I don't need to go into all the details of every single thing that the background has. I might just share those few sentences.
And I think that actually is a perfect segue to kind of our first of two role plays, just because that one is going to target a bit more of what you might encounter, or maybe you've already encountered yourself in kind of a one-on-one conversation about somebody that might be left-leaning and, you know, concerned about some of the facets or the way that the policy deals with regulation. So the setup for this, I'm going to invite you all to our Reader's Theater. This is going to be the final section of tonight's training. And Tony and Adeline are in a random, nondescript coffee shop after the era of social distancing ends and are dialoguing about the topic of the Energy Innovation Act. I'll pass it to them to start.
Adeline, it's nice to hear about your work with CCL. You know how concerned I am about the current rollback of environmental regulations. So I like the idea of making fossil fuels more expensive, but I just don't think it's worth the trade-off of the regulatory pause you described.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. I get it that you're concerned about regulations. Could you tell me a bit more about what part of the regulatory pause feels like too much of a trade-off for you?
Well, for one, I think 10 years is just too long, especially when we know the next decade is pivotal to getting things right on climate change.
Yeah, I entirely agree. The next decade is so critical. Can I share what helps me feel comfortable with the way it's designed? And then I'd love to hear your reflections.
Sure.
So one reason I support a strong price on carbon is that it can pass now with bipartisan support, and it can be placed and reducing emissions within 9 months, much faster than any new regulations could be implemented. I'm also confident that the Energy Innovation Act is designed in a way that EPA regulations shouldn't need to be reinstated after 10 years. Current modeling shows the Energy Innovation Act meeting its strong emission targets. CCL is fully confident that this bill will keep emissions in line with the reduction schedule through at least 2030. But if we aren't meeting those targets, I love that the regulatory authority is not just restored to the EPA after 10 years, but EPA authority would be strengthened to require the EPA to institute regulations to meet emission targets. And this is stronger regulatory legislation than has ever existed in the US.
Okay, well, I like requiring the EPA to act, and I like that there's room for other policies. I'm not sure I'm willing to bet everything on the market and economic models, though. But I still don't get why diminish the Clean Air Act at all. For me, I just don't like that any policy might erode this fundamental bedrock of our environmental law.
Yeah, I totally agree, and the Clean Air Act is so important. And if you look at it, the bill text makes it really clear that the Clean Air Act will remain the law of the land. Unfortunately, the Clean Air Act has not been enough to really address climate change. We need new legislation. This policy puts a strong price on carbon, and after 10 years actually gives clear direction from to the EPA from Congress that would prevent the type of court challenges that have hampered policies based on the current authority of the Clean Air Act.
So what about things like vehicle mileage standards and the Clean Power Plan? Does this bill affect them?
Yeah, great question. The Energy Innovation Act would affect the Clean Power Plan, except that it never went into effect and has been replaced by the Affordable Clean Energy Rule written by the Trump administration. It also affects greenhouse gas permitting rules for industrial plants, but everything else remains intact and untouched. The policy provides for continued authority for the EPA to keep our air and water clean and healthy, and allows for the continuation of vehicle mileage, you know, the CAFE standards, the renewable fuel standard, the ability to regulate methane leaks, and even states' ability to pass additional greenhouse gas regulation.
Okay, well, that's quite a bit more limited than I was thinking. But aren't you concerned that this might open things up for bad actors in Congress to insert other language that limits the Clean Air Act?
I have been really concerned about that, but what gives me relief is that if you think about it, every piece of legislation in Congress goes through this same markup and amendment process. So the likelihood that the same Congress that would pass H.R. 763 into law would also approve of provisions that would threaten the Clean Air Act seems incredibly unlikely. I know for a fact that CCL does not want this to happen and would do everything in the organization's power to make sure it doesn't.
Okay, well, I'll also do everything in my power to make sure that doesn't happen.
That's great. And I really want you and all concerned Americans speaking up to make sure Congress does the right thing. For me, the regulatory limits feel like an acceptable trade-off because they're so minimal, and this policy will achieve much higher emission reductions than any regulations proposed to date. I also feel really good knowing that Congress, as well as state and local governments, can always enact further legislation addressing climate change as it sees fit, or as we in the public demand.
Cool. Well, thanks for letting me know more. I'm still on the fence, but it's really helpful to have more context.
All right. That was the first one. And I invite you to listen in on the second one here. We're going to do, that was a one-on-one scenario. This next one is going to set up a group discussion or model what would happen if you were in a larger discussion area, given the importance of context. And feel free to listen into, you know, some of the key areas that Tony and Adeline reviewed as far as how to engage in dialogue and reflective listening as we go through this one. All right, go for it.
Okay, so this is about government overreach, and it's, you know, a conservative audience, and I've just given my presentation. And so now we've got some time for Q&A. Yes, you there. Go ahead.
Right. So thanks for this presentation, but I have to be honest. I'm someone who prefers small government in general, and this policy just feels too invasive and unnecessary.
Thanks for sharing your concern. I know how you feel. I don't want the government intruding in my life either. Personally, though, I think this approach actually balances the proper role for our government while keeping the size small. For me, it's all about the economics of pollution. Right now, people can pollute for free. Anyone can dispose of an unlimited amount of CO2 into the air at no cost. We don't let people dump trash for free. Why is air pollution free? Even with a small government, we still need to prevent other people dumping their trash on you. I think the Energy Innovation Act creates a minimally invasive way to do that. It's much less invasive than regulations or government spending. Okay, next question.
Hey there, this is Brett Cease, local board member. Just wanted to build off of what Adeline was saying there, and I definitely want to prioritize freedom of choice above other things. So, you know, this policy feels like it's going to get in the way with government dictating my choices and telling me which car to drive or what to eat or, you know, even putting a price on the fossil fuels I use.
Well, you are right. Freedom is a bedrock American value. You know, and people should be free to do what they want, that is, as long as it doesn't cause undue harm to others in the process. The reason why, in this case, there is a role for government is because someone is going to be impacted by pollution and the effects of a changing climate. A lot of economists, including iconic libertarian economists like Milton Friedman, agree that taxing pollution is perfectly consistent with free market principles.
Really? I actually didn't realize that Friedman said that.
Yeah, and for me, that's why pricing pollution seems like the best choice. Economists say until there's a clear price on pollution, people will continue to take what is free. Next question.
Okay, another question I have. Why does the government need to be involved at all? Can't we just trust the market to innovate solutions for this problem?
You're right. Innovation is certainly key, but businesses choose to innovate when they can make more money by doing so. Economists would also say that if you want sustained market innovation to reduce emissions, there needs to be a cost associated with those emissions. By making polluters pay, this will drive innovation. This is the least intrusive way to reduce emissions across the entire economy that provides the most freedom to people and businesses. Next.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking our questions here. So I think what it sounds like you're saying is that, you know, it's great for businesses innovating, but what about the costs that are going to be, you know, borne by all of us with our rising energy bills? You know, are we going to see people on the streets like the Yellow Vest movement with a policy like this?
I think it's unacceptable and politically unviable to solve climate change on the backs of hardworking Americans. That's why the dividend is so essential. With this policy, people will be taken to the streets, but only to spend their dividend checks. The dividend allows American families to make ends meet despite any potential increases in their costs. 2/3 of households will come out ahead under this plan.
Yeah, but I just don't believe the government is really going to be giving the money back. Once they have it in their hands, they'll spend it on something.
I certainly understand not having a high level of trust in our government. That is why we need conservatives at the table when this bill moves through Congress, to assure that the fee is distributed back to the people. The Energy Innovation Act tries to address this by paying the first month's dividend before the carbon fee is in effect. This is to make sure that households can handle any price increases and to demonstrate a commitment to return the carbon fee revenue to American families. By making the dividend a tangible and transparent thing, any future political leader that proposed diverting funds from the dividend would face the wrath of voters who would feel the effects personally. Okay, time for one more question.
All right, well, here's one. Isn't that just wealth distribution or redistribution then? It sounds, you know, like you're just proposing another tax that's going to fall on all of us in the middle class and give it all away.
In this case, everyone will bear some of the costs and everyone will get a dividend. By providing everyone with the same dividend, this preserves personal freedom to choose. Currently, people with lower incomes tend to cause less emissions. They fly less, they own less stuff. People causing less emissions will see more money from the dividend than they see in increased cost. But all of us have the option of lowering our emissions by our personal choices. And that is what this bill is designed to encourage. Lower emissions by having a cost associated with those emissions. It's the first time that avoiding taxes is not just legal, but totally encouraged.
Okay, well, I get that, but you know, the policy obviously is trying to get the market to reflect an accurate cost. I'm just not a fan of the government spending and stepping in to solve any kind of market problem.
Well, for me, it comes down to this. Not addressing climate change is likely to grow the government. As more money is spent on disaster relief, crop insurance, flood prevention, military conflicts, If you want to solve climate change, a carbon fee and dividend is the least intrusive, smallest government solution to the problem. It requires much less government than regulations or government spending while preserving the most freedom of choice for everyone. So thanks again for everyone's time today. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you, Tony, for the ACE presentation there.
If there is a question you have that you felt like wasn't answered by this document, there's plenty of other like FAQs on our website that are more just like policy details, but this is really about like common pushback or concerns about the bill or CCL. You can either start a new forum post and this link will take you to the CCL forums there, or you can email me at Adeline at Citizens Climate. So.
And like Adeline said, if you have new questions that you want us to address, you can let us know. Or if you have questions about how we answered these, or you think there's a different way to do it, any comments that you have on this, you know, let us know in the forums. And, you know, we want this to be a living document that grows and evolves and really pulls on the, you know, wisdom of all CCL volunteers. So, you know, keep sharing your thoughts on these and we will keep trying to produce better and better resources for all of us.
Yeah, well put, Tony. All right, well, so that we can sign off, and thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Good to see your friends. You know where to
find us. Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.